Hi, this is Julie Appleby with Kaiser Health News. We're here this afternoon to talk with Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon. He's a Democrat who's been working on health care reform issues for many years and has some ideas on what he'd like to see in the proposals now before Congress. So, Senator, you've got an amendment that you're hoping to introduce, I guess, what, next week? Is that right? And your amendment would allow more people, specifically those with job-based insurance, to use the exchanges to buy health insurance. Why is this important?
What my amendment will do is carry out what the president has indicated over the last few months are his priorities for health reform. For example, when the president spoke to the Congress on health care Wednesday last, he said his guiding principle for health care reform was choice and competition. Unfortunately, the bills that are being written in the United States Congress not only don't give people choices like they're members of Congress, which is something else the president has talked about, they don't give Americans, more than 200 million of them, choices at all. And it's choices that are going to allow them to hold insurance companies accountable. It's choices that will give them the opportunity to get more affordable options. And yet, when you actually read the text of the various bills, including the finance committee legislation, you're not seeing that the president's guiding principle, as he would characterize it, carried out.
Because many people will not be able to go onto the exchange because they have job-based insurance. So explain just really simply how your bill would change that. I work for a company. I'm offered insurance at my company, but do I have to take it?
We would, in effect, put a comma at the end of that sentence and say you can keep the coverage you have. But if you don't like the coverage you have, you will be in a position to go into the marketplace and have other offerings where insurance companies can't discriminate against you. You'll have real bargaining power, low administrative costs. You'll have the kind of choice and competition the president has talked about.
Isn't there a little bit of a caveat to that? The employers are going to be required to offer you a choice of two different plans. So if your employer offers you a choice of a lower-cost plan and a higher-cost plan, you still would need to choose one of those. Is that correct?
If employers do offer two or more alternatives, one low-cost alternative, that's opening up choice. We want to be sensitive to employer concerns in that way. If employers would like to go to the exchange, and they could have that kind of opportunity, would have the opportunity to get a discount for their employees. We have risk adjustment and reinsurance to deal with any issue relating to the nature of who in their workforce would go to the exchange. So we have taken a number of steps to ensure that both employers and employees have more choices.
On that risk adjustment thing, I'm still wondering, aren't employers going to be worried about this because they're going to be afraid that all their young, healthy workers are going to say, you know what, I think I'm just going to go to the exchange and buy my coverage?
Health benefits are a major recruitment tool for employers, and particularly good workers. I don't see employers scaling back their health care benefits as a result of this. There are very significant questions about who, if anyone, might decide to leave their employer. I think arguably those who might be most likely to leave would be older workers who'd be looking for a bargain rather than younger workers who might say to themselves, I got a million things to do in my life. I don't know if I'm going to call up the exchange and talk to the HR department and look at my various options and go through the steps to take advantage of the additional choices.
There's lots and lots of division, even among the Democrats, on what should be included in the final bill. What do you think it will take to get enough votes for passage?
I think at the end of the day, a member of the United States Senate has got to be able to look a middle-class family in the eye and say, I think this will deliver real health security for you. If that family, for example, makes $65,000, $66,000 and ends up paying considerably more than they pay today, plus faces the prospect of a penalty if they don't comply, or gets an exemption, which leaves them uninsured, plus doesn't give them real choice, I think they're going to have some real concerns. If you have a family that's making, say, $66,000, and you look at the cost of a basic package for many of those people, it could be, say, 13% of their income, perhaps.
And that's just the premium.
Right, that's $8,500 for the premium. Then on top of that, they have co-payments, they have deductibles, they have out-of-pocket, you know, expenses. That's going to be a very significant hit on them.
So how can that be fixed?
Choice and affordability are, to some extent, two sides of the same coin. So choice is all about creating competition, which can make coverage more affordable while still giving people access to the good quality plans.
Well, you could say that there's choice and competition in Massachusetts, but there's still a lot of folks there who can't afford and get the exemption for not being able to afford insurance. So is it not working there?
Massachusetts and all of the states still really don't have the tools for the individual to take control over their health care. They, of course, can't touch the federal tax rules, which are a major factor in people's, you know, decision-making. They can't touch a whole host of federal policies that go to the question of cost control. I think asking states and individuals to by themselves control costs is like asking somebody to play in the NBA with lead in their shoes.
So does the Baucus proposal reduce spending over time or have any kind of cost controls in it that you think are going to be effective?
It wouldn't be my first choice. My first choice was to convert the federal tax exclusion into a deduction or a credit, a progressive deduction of close to $18,000, so that individuals who shopped would actually get a tax cut. The proposal in the Baucus bill seeks to tax high-cost policies, which means individuals will not have the same direct ability to benefit from shopping wisely, and we're looking at the ramifications of that proposal with, I think, a number of thoughtful people saying that those costs could get passed on to consumers.
Is there anything in the Baucus proposal that you see that would reduce spending over time?
The demonstration, you know, projects to start moving to a more value-based rather than a volume-based system are a start.
Will the Baucus proposal add to the deficit? The CBO is saying it would actually reduce the deficit over time.
I think that until Director Elmendorf goes through this carefully, the committee, you know, committee deliberations, are going to be a lot of questions with respect to the long term. But economists say that if you don't give individuals more control over health decisions, especially the 160 million or so who have coverage, not much changes anytime soon.
We've heard a lot of discussion from the insurers, from the drug companies, from the hospitals, but we haven't really seen a whole lot of pushback from them yet. But now that the Baucus proposal is out there, what do you think is going to happen? Have the White House and Baucus successfully sort of negotiated agreements with those groups that are enough to keep them from fighting it, or do you think we're going to start seeing some fighting back from the special interest groups?
It depends how you want to go about measuring health reform legislation. If the primary consideration is how many groups in Washington, D.C. endorse it and think about how it's going to affect them, it's your right to use that measure. The measure I'm using is being able to look a middle-class family in the eye. And that's a family who has insurance, giving them choice, the benefits of choice and competition, so they can hold insurance companies accountable and get better quality, more affordable packages. And it includes my concern for the uninsured. If you can't say to those middle-class families, with insurance or without insurance, this is a deal that's going to give you health security, I think it's pretty hard to sustain that as real reform.
So at the end of the day, if the measure that comes before the Senate doesn't have that, if you can't look people in the eye and say, this is affordable, you may still be just trying to decide whether you're going to vote for it or not. And you're going to get a lot of pressure from the party and from the president saying you can't stand in, you know, the way of 60 years of progress on this, Senator, you've got to vote for this. How would you respond?
Julie, if it's not possible to explain to middle-class folks across the country how health reform is affordable for them, there are going to be a lot of senators saying, that doesn't cut it. Let's go back and get it right.
Okay, well, Senator, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us this afternoon.
Good. Thanks for your interest.